This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 80, IV Pitocin to Induce. Hello again, everyone. You found it. We are back. This is the Geek Dads, episode number 80. I am Ken Denmead, editor of GeekDad.com, and we're in this interesting little in-the-middle place where we are in the holidays, which is always an exciting time for the Geek Dads because there's so much for us to do. You know, we just finished all the decorations and fun for Halloween, and we're, you know, sort of ramping up for Thanksgiving with the family, and then, of course, you know, it's all downhill to Christmas. In fact, I pointed out to someone today, and they probably would have slapped me if they'd actually been in the same room with me, that it's only 7 shopping weeks until Christmas. So just beware. I will now introduce our group for this week. Oh, Jenny, I heart Christmas. Oh, that was cute. Jenny in the chat room making use of the automatic emoticons in the chat room. She didn't even plan on that turning into it. Actually turned into a heart in the chat. She didn't even know it was going to happen. Now she'll go crazy. I expect to see all sorts of emoticons showing up. Anyway, we've got Mr. Matt Blum. Matt, how you doing this week?
Recovering from a sinus infection, but otherwise okay. Not a terribly exciting week, but that's okay. I've had enough excitement. Exciting weeks recently. So,
yeah, you probably caught it from the president. You know, whatever. Yeah, right. That's awesome. Okay. Then going around the room, we have Mr. Jonathan Liu. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Oh, I'm doing all right. We've had sort of a good news, bad news sort of week. I'll just share the good news was that our county passed a school bond that I was helping campaign for. So we're excited about that.
Congratulations, cool. Sir.
No doubt.
Now you get to spend your children's money to educate your children.
Actually, we end up getting a interest-free loan from the federal government is how it worked out.
So you're spending our money to educate your kids. Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
It's the American way. I understand. For the last 9 years, I've worked as a consultant to the transportation agency in the county to the south of me. So I tell all my friends who live there that their property taxes have paid my salary for the last 9 years. So I totally appreciate them. So, for
doing that. Who's going to campaign against, yes for kids? Like, no one's going to put up a sign that says no for kids.
No against the government's greed and unfunded taxes. No. Oh, sorry. I can't keep it up. Sorry. And last but not least, the man who currently lives in tomorrow. We have a guest who can actually tell us what's going to happen the day after this podcast is recorded. Mr. Daniel Donahue in lovely Australia.
Hey, how you going?
So what's Wednesday like?
Wednesday's not too bad. Nothing amazing is going to happen, and the world's not going to end tomorrow. So you got to get out of bed and go to work again.
Ah, dang it! I was hoping to get it getting off there.
So it's mixed, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's mixed.
So let's see. We are recording this at 7 p.m. Pacific Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. What time is it there?
It's just after 2 in the afternoon, and I've been sitting here for 2 hours because sometimes, for some reason, and I know it's a rare occasion that I appear on the podcast, but I swear, sometimes it's 12 o'clock, and sometimes it can be 1 o'clock, and sometimes it can be 2 o'clock, depending on where the daylight savings type things are lying at any given stage.
Now, do you have a version of daylight savings there?
Yes. Australian Eastern Standard Time is now on daylight savings, so summertime.
So that may very well be it, because ours is now, you know, they, in the last year, they changed ours to stretch it out for a couple of weeks. So I'm wondering if it's like a compound situation where we actually switched later and you switched earlier, so that for this interstitial period, instead of being an hour off of our usual whatever, 15 hour off sync or whatever, you were now 18 hours off or something. I have no idea. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, no, I do understand. This happened quite a while ago. Do you know what we did? Do you know what we did in Australia for the benefit of the United States?
Oh, your clocks all go the other way around too. Right?
When the Sydney Olympics was on, we actually changed our daylight saving time to be earlier to suit broadcasting into the United States.
You're so accommodating.
Everyone enjoyed having 3 weeks extra time, but they just decided, hell, let's just leave it there.
Let's just keep it that way. I like it.
Yeah, let's just keep it that way. So we have about 6 months now of daylight saving.
That's fantastic.
It's fantastic unless you've got very young children. It drives me nuts.
Oh, they don't want to go to bed because it's still light outside?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
See, now it gets dark at 4.
Yeah,
the daylight savings is over.
I know. Go to bed. But, Dad, it's only 5:15. Sorry, it's dark outside. You better.
Yeah, and they get up at, 5:30. It's like, I need it to stay dark later.
Well, it'll get there. We're still, still 6 weeks downhill to the solstice. So.
Yeah.
See, my younger son's birthday happens to be the solstice, so we're like hyper, our family is hyper aware of the winter solstice.
It could be worse. Could live in, Barrow, Alaska,
There are many reasons why it would be worse to live in Barrow, Alaska.
Quite true.
The latitudinal differential in daylight is not the least, but yeah.
Right, but can you imagine, you're already, incredibly far north, it's incredibly cold, and then it also stays dark for like 22 hours a day in December, Yeah.
Sometimes I figure that's why Marion Call does these long 50 state tours, is that she just, wants the tan. Or, increase her vitamin D capacity. But, yes, Jenny, I don't think she's redhead. She doesn't tan. No, she doesn't. No.
I'm pretty sure not.
Okay, cool. Well, newsy things, geeky newsy things. Let's go around the table and hear what people have to bring up from the last 2 weeks that we've been out. Matt, have you got anything you wanted to bring up?
Well, since I was just watching the DVR'd version of the second episode, the Walking Dead has been pretty darn cool.
Seems to have been well received.
The only beef I have with it is that they're for some reason, at least in the second episode, they're referring to the zombies by the term geek.
Right. Well, just the Glenn.
Yeah, I know, but like that wasn't in the comics, as far as I recall. I didn't read all of them, but I did read a few of them, and I don't remember that. And I just thought that was weird. It just seemed so out of place.
I wonder if they're trying to play off of like Vietnam War era derogatory terms for the enemy.
Well, except the guy who was doing it is the kid. He's like,
the Asian kid.
It's like he's like 16 or something. supposed to be. He's supposed to be like a teenager, I think. So I don't know.
Yeah, in their world, see, the term geek was never co-opted for other reasons. So for some reason, he uses it for zombies. I don't know. Yeah, it did seem kind of odd. Well, but he was also the only one doing that.
There are two ways to look at this. Okay, number one, they're demeaning the word geek and we should be up in arms and whatever about it. Number two, we get more page views.
The geeks have taken over the world.
And somebody quickly go out and get zombiedad.com for us, please. Okay.
That's not a bad idea, getting zombiedad.com, actually.
Yeah, there's probably a squatter on it already. A very slow moving shambling squatter, but yes.
It's got a coming soon on it. Yeah.
I told you. Yes. Awesome. Any more on that? Any other geeky news from over there?
I thought it was might be fun to mention that Google's doing what they did last year, only with more airlines, where they're doing free Wi-Fi for travelers during the holiday season.
We like this.
Yeah, I think it's last year. I think they just did Virgin. And then they're doing a couple more airlines this year.
Yeah, I think they've got Virgin, Delta, and at least one other this year. But I'm totally on to this. I got to fly out to New York for the Wired Holiday Store first weekend in December. So thumbs up for the free Wi-Fi.
They're doing AirTran, Delta, and Virgin America.
Very nice.
All domestic flights between November 20th and January 2nd.
So it's like so that's pretty totally, you know, totally good time to travel.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, the holidays are a totally sucky time to travel. So, you know, at least while you're in the air, you can catch up on the bad email that you're getting. And no peace. You know, you could have missed all that junk coming into your email box. But no, you get it. No, it's a good thing. I mean, it's some of the awesomest things have been, you know, being able to actually be in conversations with people while you're flying through email and Twitter and listening to streaming music from internet radio and stuff. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. The only other thing I was wanted to mention is I saw Megamind over the weekend.
And,
it's not a great movie. It doesn't rise to the level of like a Pixar film, but it's more fun than most of the DreamWorks animated films have been, in my opinion. So, worth seeing.
Excellent.
I do have to say, though, that I was kind of, both my wife and I independently thought that Megamind's physical action, you know, the way he was done physically, was incredibly reminiscent of Neil Patrick Harris, just the way he carried himself. And the way he his kind of attitude, and it's like so. But I swear he could sue. I mean, it was incredible. we each independently came up with it. I mean, it wasn't so.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, because it's incredibly similar. I mean, it's just
amazing. Neil Patrick Harris particular character, or just him as the individual person.
Just. Mostly him
or a combination of Doogie Howser and Dr. Horrible. Like,
well, see, I actually think of him more now as because I watch How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, of course,
the sitcom he's on. So, kind of, yeah, more the way that he is when he acts, but he kind of carries himself in a certain way. I don't know. I don't see him when he's not acting that much. So, you know,
you don't just hang out.
No, I don't hang out that much. I used to all the time, but you know, just not anymore.
Well, that's because you moved on. Now you've got, you know, the president and Adam and Jamie and all of that.
Yeah, right.
did folks watch you know, political affiliations aside, the rally to restore honor
sanity and fear?
And did you see the pre-show with Adam and Jamie?
Yes.
That was great.
Well, I tried to go to it. We tried to go because, you know, we're in the area. But we got to the metro station about an hour and a half, I guess, before it started. And there was a line, not just from the platform of the metro station, but all the way up the escalator through the main body of the metro station and out into the parking lot. Just to get a train. And this is on a Saturday, mind you. I've never seen that kind of crowd.
It's lovely to think that people are using their public transit to get to important events.
Yeah. Well,
this was a liberal-focused event because the people were using public transit. So.
Yeah, I mean, I
didn't see those sort of crowds during the Sorry.
Yeah. Well, they actually set a new record for ridership for a Saturday.
That's amazing.
Which had been previously set by one of the rallies during Operation Desert Storm in the first Iraq War.
Wow.
Pretty neat. So, wow. Yeah, so we just got right back in the car and headed home and watched on TV.
sort of like football games. Sometimes the best seat is on your sofa.
Well, friends of mine actually went to a different metro station and tried to get on a train, but by the time they got close to the trains, the rally was pretty much over.
Wow. Yeah, so the deal would have been you get in your car, you drive out to the furthest metro station on any given line.
This was one of those.
Oh, it really was? Okay. See, I was going to be glib, and then you get on at the end station and ride it all the way in.
This was one of the end stations.
Oh wow! Jamie and Adam did this sort of pre-show warm up with, you know, they got this entire crowd of what, like 200,000 people.
Yeah, about 215, I think.
215, they said, from one end of the mall to the other, which is, I don't how big is that? A mile?
Oh, the mall. That part of the mall, I guess. Yeah. I don't know exactly.
I mean, it was basically almost at the feet of Congress, all the way out to the Washington Monument, and probably a little bit beyond that. And
No, it didn't go that far.
Didn't go that far? Okay.
No, it didn't. It stayed mostly. It didn't quite get down to the monument.
Okay.
It didn't. And if people had been down there, they wouldn't have heard anything anyway, because they didn't have jumbotrons or speakers, even for the people who were up fairly close, because they didn't expect that kind of crowd.
Wow. That's neat. They got them doing waves, which was just so awesome. So we've learned, like, you know, the propagation speed of waves in people.
It was pretty funny. I especially liked it when they had the waves meet in the middle.
The cancel, yeah. But they didn't self-cancel. They kept going.
No, they didn't.
That
yes.
was awesome. And then it crashed back over the stage.
It is approximately a mile wide.
Yeah.
Wow.
And even better was they had a seismologist with a seismograph off the stage. And they got everybody on the mall to jump up and down at the same time. And to see what it would register on the Richter scale. Which turned out to be not that impressive.
Much.
But it was measurable.
But it was measurable, which is very cool. So much fun. And it was just so neat to see Jamie and Adam there. They were having a good... You know, I have to say, I think Jamie has gotten looser and more fun over the years.
There was only one direction to go. But yes, that's true.
Very true. So you're not getting any interviews soon. No.
Yeah. I think he'd probably be the first to agree, actually.
Probably.
You reckon?
Well, that's cool. Let's see. Jonathan, have you got any geeky news of the last couple of weeks?
Oh, nothing really exciting, I think. I did pick up this book on Amazon called Machine of Death. Did anybody read about that? It's on.
Is this anything like Faces of Death?
No.
Okay, good.
If you go to.
Not that I know what that is.
Machineofdeath.net. They tell sort of the story of it. I mean, it's an anthology.
I'm sorry, I'd still be paranoid about going to a website named Machines of Death.
Machineofdeath.net.
It would be like a sequel to The Ring or something. You know?
It was inspired by. I don't even know the name of the comic strip, but, you know, the guy uses, like, bad clip art of dinosaurs and they have conversations. You see that?
Dinosaur comics. Yeah.
Dinosaur comics. So apparently dinosaur comics, you know, the T-Rex is having this conversation where I'm going to write this book and I don't know what it's called, but this is the premise, is that there's this machine and it tells you, it spits out a little piece of paper, tells you how you're going to die, except that it's very vague. Yes. Quants.com. Yeah. So it's very vague. And so it might say, you know, exploded or drowned or poisoned animal. And, you know, but it's also deliberately, you know, misleading. So old age could mean that you die of old age, or it could mean that, you know, this old guy shoots you. And so he's like, you know, so I'm going to write this book, and it's just going to be full of stories of people, you know, knowing how they're going to die, but, you know,
not really.
Not really. And so I guess a bunch of people got together and wrote stories you know, based on this idea. And then, you know, I mean, it was one of these things. It was like, you know, they didn't have any big names. They, you know, nobody was going to publish them. So they said, well, we're going to get this thing published and sell it online. And they had picked, you know, whatever, October 26th as this day where they said, we're going to try to become a number one Amazon bestseller.
For a day.
Because you know, it's hard to be a bestseller for a while, but it's easy to be a bestseller for one day if everyone buys it that one day. Right. So I happened to see the a post on it. I think it was probably on io9.com. And I said, well, that sounds kind of fun. You know, I'd like to support this project. So they did, by the time I looked at it, it was in the evening, and they had gotten to the number one in whatever category they were in. And so I, you know, that just came in the mail this week. So I haven't gotten the chance to really, really read any of the stories yet.
Well, once again, not to be overtly political, but I believe there was also some fallout from that. And that it happened to be the same day that,
Glenn Beck's new book
came out. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Beck's book did not make it. Some of his other books have made it to number one. It did not make it to number one on the day that it was released. And supposedly the next day he ranted about it being an obvious, you know, liberal plot, progressive plot against his book that people, you know, connived to get this book, The Machine of Death, to number one in front of his book,
which of course gave it some wonderful publicity.
Exactly. Because people were like, I've never heard of that book. I should go check it out.
Yes. Yes. First of all, you got the people that say, oh, anything that he hates must get. Yes. And then,
yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
But
so it looks like a lot of fun. You know, lots of, they just got a lot of different writers and a lot of, different illustrators. To illustrate the stories. Well, you know, here's some of the, I mean, the chapter names are just, you know, the what's printed on this slip of paper. So, Flaming Marshmallow.
I'll never go camping again.
Piano.
That's it. No more speakeasies for me.
So anyway, Heat Death of the Universe. That's a good one.
Well, that either means you're going to be around for a really long time, or, you know, don't stand next to the microwave.
So anyway, I thought, you know, that may be something that would be worth writing about later on.
Excellent. That sounds like a ton of fun.
Definitely sounds like a good thing.
Mr. Donahue, any interesting geeky news from the future?
Lots of geeky news from the future. Oh, well, specifically, my main interest in recent times has been the Australian space program.
Hold. The Australians have a space program. Let's start with that.
It doesn't exist yet, but evidently there was a conference recently of Australian space scientists. I think it consisted of two blokes that tinker around with rockets in their backyard. Yes.
Two guys down at the pub. Yeah.
It was reported in the media here that they came up with a big proposal that they were going to get the federal government to fund a space program for Australia with the main aim of developing some small light that they would launch and send towards the sun. But get this. So what's NASA operate on? 16, 17 billion a year or something? It comes up to around now. Is that approximately right?
Sounds like a good number. Sure.
Yeah, that sounds like a good number. Let's run with that. These guys were asking for $10 million over 10 years. So they needed $1 million a year to operate their space program.
Splitting it, half a million each, 10 years. Then they figure they'll come up with something after that. And this totally sounds like, you know, two mates down at the pub.
But they'd gone a step further. They'd actually looked at the number of Australians that pay tax, and they worked out that really it was roughly just going to cost you a dollar a person So they thought that that was a reasonable sort of way to go about it. But the reason that links into more recent news is that we've actually had Hillary Clinton visiting down here recently. She spent a couple of days in Melbourne. And like when any sort of international figure visits Australia, it seems to be sort of like the holiday leg of their journey. But she didn't.
Well, it is what, late spring, nearly summer there.
Yeah. Exactly. Perfect time to visit. But amid all the other sort of general statements that politicians make when they stand up together and do all those sorts of things, is that Australia is going to be working with the United States on a space junk monitoring program that they'll look at starting next year. So I'm not sure how these two guys wanting to start a space program have gone, but it looks like that there's going to be some sort of space activity. And that mainly comes from the fact that Australia is just predominantly one big desert. And so we do have a few different, far-flung, telescopes and devices that look up into space.
You got good regions without light pollution so that you have good monitoring stations.
Exactly. So I think that one of these somewhere out near Uluru or somewhere in the middle of the Nullarbor Plain will be supporting to monitor space junk.
Don't those just sound like cool places, guys? Uluru or the Nullarbor Plain. It sound like names from the second trilogy of Star Wars. Do you go to work in Naboo, Dan? Do you? No. I mean, you got to figure George Lucas was probably just sitting there reading through the Atlas of Australia to come up with names for his worlds and his. No.
Yeah. No. Probably. And even visually, most of Australia looks like Tatooine if you actually think about it. It's just one big desert. With a couple of sheds in a strategically located position.
And one big rock out there in the middle.
And I'm a big rock, not, yeah.
I'm hoping not a lot of the sand people, though,
No, not too many, I think.
Okay, that's good. That could really ruin your day.
Well, speaking of towards that direction and slightly further south, obviously there's been a lot of news coming out of New Zealand in the last few weeks about them getting all of the difficulties settled with respect to getting The Hobbit filming down there. I guess there had been a lot of how much of the New Zealand stuff shows up in the Australian press.
We give it a small amount of space,
sort of like what they take up. Yes, but
yeah, exactly.
And there it goes. I'm never going to get an interview with Peter Jackson. Look at that one. But there had been some like very significant labor relations issues going on. The New Zealand Actors Union had been like fighting, dealing with the production company, and it was basically going to keep The Hobbit from filming in New Zealand, and it ultimately came down to like meetings with the Prime Minister of New Zealand to get everything settled so that they would be able to start filming there rather than taking it off to, it was either going to go to Australia or Ireland, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly in their best interest.
And that was the main, that was the main report. And the main report that came through to Australia was we might get The Hobbit. That was the lead sort of direction of those articles.
It was like, woo, and, yeah.
But we were never going to get it because some weird things happened in the economic state of the universe, and our dollar is now, Australian dollar is now on parity with the United States dollar, which is the first time that's ever happened. And so that's been the biggest. That's the biggest, geekiest news that's happened, because it suddenly means that we can actually, using Amazon.com and all of those sites, even with postage, makes it very, very worthwhile for most of us in Australia at the moment. Because as you found out recently, Ken, Australia doesn't actually have its own Amazon.com store.
Yes, we learned that recently. You wonder what the business story is behind that. Every other country has its own Amazon. Why the heck isn't there an Amazon.au?
Yeah, well, I think it just takes time. We're at the very end of the world, and there's only 20 million of us. There's not that big a market share. So it's just, you know, they take their time getting here. And when it's finally when someone goes, oh, we need to eke out a bit more profit, and someone looks over and goes, oh, we haven't tried Australia yet. Let's go down there.
Well, you'd think, especially if the dollars are on parity now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so continuing on the Hobbit thing, all of the casting so far has been, you know, first of all, you know, they're doing all of the Hobbits. I mean, you know, one of the things you almost worry about going into having the Hobbit made is that, okay, there were 12 dwarves, right? Am I getting my count right?
Yeah.
Yes, sounds right.
There were 12 dwarves. You know, you have to cast every single one of them and make them distinct and individual characters, or would, you know, a Hollywood studio system go, you know, 12? You know, nobody's going to be able to pay attention to that many dwarves. It'll be overwhelming. Let's just, you know, 2.
Well, really, honestly, the way the book's written, many of them really don't have that much of an individual personality.
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. they're like mentioned at Feely and Keely and Oin and Gloin, and, you know, they're always mentioned in conjunction, and it's hard to keep them straight in the book. I mean, honestly,
very much so. But they have been casting over the last few weeks some very distinctive Australian and English actors into a number of those roles. You know, there is a specific bomber. There is like at least one of the Feelys and Keelys are in and things like that. I don't know if we've seen a Gloin yet, but who would, you know, just get some recognition because he's Gimli's dad. But
true.
And Martin Freeman as Bilbo.
I think that's a great choice.
Really. I think that is an awesome choice. After all the other rumors of different people, Martin Freeman, just because he's, you know, we've seen him in a few things. He's just, yeah, just what a, well, he was Arthur Dent, right?
He was. Although, actually, I've just been watching the Masterpiece Theater, the Sherlock.
Yes. Holmes,
and he's in that.
He's Dr. Watson, and he's really good.
Oh.
Not as good as, the guy they have doing Holmes is spectacular, but.
That's extraordinary. I watched the third one of those last night, and they are just, they're fantastic.
Yeah, well, there's more episodes. I hope they bring them to Masterpiece Theater too, because they've shot more of them. They've shown in England, I think.
Yeah,
but not here. Incidentally, I was just looking. There's the talking about Amazon sites. They have an Austria site. Austria has like, yeah, a third the population of Australia. So that doesn't make any sense. Anyway.
Yes, but they were once an empire, so they deserve their own story.
And
they come first alphabetically.
It's spelled almost the same. Yes.
So wait, so is there an Amazon for Hungary? Because then the Austro-Hungarian Empire has two stores. No. Okay.
No.
World War I as fought on online commerce. I don't know. So yeah, Martin Freeman.
Do you know who else is going to be in that? Do you know who else is going to be in The Hobbit?
Who else?
Sorry, Ken. I saw the and I don't know the actor's name, but he played the vampire in that BBC series Being Human. Did you get that in the States?
We have. I think we've got Being Human on BBC America, and it's
Is that Richard Armitage?
Yeah, that's Armitage. He's the guy who's playing
Thorin.
Thorin. Yeah.
Yeah, the only the dwarf that matters the most, yeah.
Exactly. Well, he just hurt all of the other dwarves' feelings.
Does
now.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that was him. He was in Armitage was in the Robin Hood, the BBC Robin Hood that they did recently.
Oh, who did he play in that?
Guy of Gisborne. He was Sir Guy.
Yeah.
Got it. I didn't watch the show, so I can't. I don't.
I do remember seeing some of that.
Yeah. He seems too skinny to play a dwarf.
Okay. They can do marvelous things. Feeling. They can do marvelous things.
It's easier to make people look fat than it is to make them look skinny.
True. True. True indeed.
But
and of course they've got Ian McKellen, you know. And,
well, have they actually announced Ian?
I don't know if they've officially announced it, but Ian McKellen said at one point that he would do it. Then why in God's name would they get anybody else?
Well, yeah, very true. So my thing about this, I want to see some of the other casting, like who's going to be Bjorn.
Well, actually, I just saw on the One Ring, I was just looking, they have a thing on the Hobbit cast. They haven't announced who he's going to play, but apparently Brian Blessed has been cast.
I saw a little bit something about that. That's really interesting.
I could see him playing Bjorn.
Yeah, although...
I could see that. He's big. He speaks really loud.
Yes.
You know? I love that they picked...
Hawkman!
I love that they got Bill Nye to do Smaug's voice.
Oh, that is so fantastic.
Because that's brilliant. He's got such a great voice.
So
it's definitely taking shape.
What I'm interested to hear, and I want to hear if you know, as the casting happens, it'll sort of be indicative of what they're doing with the story. But you know, the sort of rumor or talk that was always heard was because they're going to do it as a two film, that they would actually expand the story a little bit with some of the information from the appendices, and that you would actually get. Part of it was always understood that when Gandalf leaves the party, that's when he goes off to deal with. Oh yes, and DJ Murdoch III mentions also that Sylvester McCoy, who was a doctor, has been cast supposedly as Radagast.
Yeah, he's one of the Astari. Yeah,
which is really cool. I like that a lot. But so the story is that. That they would actually include a little bit of the story where the White Council takes down the Necromancer, who turns out to be Sauron, who then moves on to go back to Mordor. And then you might also get a little bit of Aragorn, who goes after Gollum.
True.
So it'll be interesting to see how much of that they do decide to bring into it, because that would be fun.
Hmm.
We can dream.
Yeah.
They've cast a lot more than I thought they had, actually. They have cast like Gloin and Dory and Bomber and Owen. And I just put the link. The One Ring has quite a bit of information on everybody.
More to see, you know, and what's really frightening is I can remember, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago, being glued almost on a daily basis to the OneRing.net, following as the casting and pre-production was happening for Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And just being devoted to that. And now it's like, I'm back to that again, because now we're going through that for The Hobbit. And it's like, and knowing how well the trilogy, you know, Lord of the Rings came out, just salivating over what's going to happen with The Hobbit. So, all right. I'll do a quick one or two things here. Who saw the new OK Go video?
Oh, I saw that today with the toast.
Stop motion animated toast.
That was excellent.
I have not seen it. I did see the new Tron trailer though.
The new Tron trailer is excellent.
It is.
It definitely fleshes some stuff out there.
I really want for my own use, the technology that they used to make Jeff Bridges look like he was 30 years ago.
Is that, I mean, you know, we saw, you know, probably like an earlier stage of evolution of that with, what was it, X-Men, the third X-Men movie?
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad.
But man, it's awesome.
But it's awesome. I mean,
he looks exactly like he did in the first Tron.
Exactly.
It's frightening. He shouldn't. Nobody should be able to look 28 years younger. Just, I'm sorry, it's not fair. Not that I want to look 9, but you know, I still
think about this. How many 50 year old actors will now go to people and say, "All right, you know what? I'm a 50 year old Oscar winning actor. Why don't you cast me in this role for a 20 something year old character?" and just, you know, I'll eat the extra $1 million it takes for the special effects to make me look that way, and let's just do it.
Is it anything like what they did to Brad Pitt for Benjamin Button?
I don't think so, because there was.
I mean, there were some scenes where, you know, where he came out and he looked like he did in, you know, 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, except but Brad Pitt doesn't.
I mean, he doesn't look like Jeff Bridges, right?
He doesn't look nearly as different as Jeff Bridges does.
I'm right, sorry. Right.
I mean, really.
Will that technology rise on the back of Jeff Bridges? Will those actors be saying, "Can I just be Jeff? just Jeff me. I'll be fine."
It's like you watch that and you're ready to go see The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes 3. All right, thank you for that throwback right there. That was like
yes.
So that was a little bit geeky. I apologize.
A little bit. But hey, you know, we're called geeky.
That's what it's supposed to be. Oh man. Excellent.
It was nice to see more than just the late cycles though, which is all they did. And,
yeah, I mean everything looks up-revved, updated, up-resed. I mean, just, you know, for the time, Tron was really amazing, and you know, but it looks a little visually dated now, and what they're doing in the new one looks like the completely appropriate next evolution of what we saw before, and it just looks like it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Do you reckon it's had the biggest lead-in time? It feels like I've been watching trailers of Tron forever.
they've certainly been hyping it.
I'm trying to remember when the first teaser stuff was shown. Was it Comic-Con before last or 2 years ago?
It was 2 years ago.
It was, yeah.
Because last year they showed it again, and that was when you finally were able to find it online. Like right. It went a full year. I don't know how they kept it a secret. It went a full year and nobody posted it because I heard it was playing at Comic-Con. And then I went and looked for it, and it wasn't until the following year that someone posted a cell phone video of the trailer from the back of the big hall, you know, crooked.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And even then you couldn't see it.
Well, you know how they kept it a secret. You were going to get sucked into that computer if you let anything out. you'd be stuffed.
I am curious to see how they... I mean, they obviously have to explain how he got back in there and how he got trapped. Because, I mean, he gets out at the end of the first movie and becomes the CEO of Enka. So, it's like, okay.
You've seen the ad that the demolecularizer is set up behind his desk at Flynn's.
Well, yeah, but that's...
Yeah, that wasn't a very wise placement.
May or may not be a trap that was set for his son, but...
Right.
Well... I love that it was
David Warner's desk at Flynn's, but I can't wait to see the story behind that.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
There is a Disney's got a graphic novel coming out. It's like a young adult target age graphic novel, but that's supposed to take place and explain what happens in the years between the first and second movie. Because obviously they're going to explain a little more in the movie itself, but there are still some, you know, questions left open that you just kind of go, okay, well, something happened and the comic is supposed to be sort of specifically about that time period.
Right. Right.
Mm. That's cool. I do wish that they would go ahead and get the first movie back out on DVD. I understand. I mean, there's been rumors that they're not doing it because they had some like test screenings of it for people who hadn't seen it before, and because the special effects are very obviously from the early 80s, that people were laughing at it. So I can sort of understand that, but my son in particular, and my daughter to a somewhat lesser extent, are really excited about seeing the new movie, and I'd like to show them the original one first. Plus, yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen the original, and I'd really like to again.
There'd be enough people out there who would buy the DVD.
Yeah, I know. And they even pulled it from Netflix.
Oh, that must be it. I know, like about 3 or 4 months ago, we showed it to our kids. We watched it.
It was on Netflix. It was not on Netflix.
They pulled it.
They pulled it. Yeah.
Well, maybe that means they are going to do a new release. I don't know.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, my neighbor happened to have the DVD, watched it recently.
I mean, I could go to eBay and spend $50 and buy a copy of it, but I really don't want to do that.
Right.
It's not worth that much.
No, it's really not. It's really not.
Do you know the movie that I always think of when I think of Tron, and this is purely from a childhood viewing perspective, and I must have been 7 or 8 when I saw Tron, but one of the other videos that must have been got was Electric Dreams, which I'd love to see them do a remake of, and I don't know if you ever remember it, but it was the first movie that was a love tryst between a man, a woman, and a computer. Did you ever see this thing? It was the guy brings home the computer and sets it up, and it takes over his life and falls in love with his girlfriend. And
sadly, I do remember that one. Now, I'm not sure whether that one that one beats out Demon Seed, though. Because that was what Demon Seed was about, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Based on a book by Richard Bachman. Or not Richard Bachman. What was the other? It was Dean Koontz's alter ego wrote the original one. But anyway, trivia. Sorry. So yes, we've been worried about robots taking over our girlfriends and wives for a long time.
Yeah.
Now it's just our iPhones. All right. I cannot think of any other super huge geeky news from the last little bit. Let's just go into some posts of the week and plug things as we're launching into the holiday season here. What I do want to bring up, we are getting very close to starting this year's, and I've realized it's the 4th annual, 12 Days of Geekmas is finally coming up. Z and I are working hard on getting giveaways for the 12 Days of Geekmas. And last year was pretty good. I think we gave away an HP home media server.
Sounds right.
Didn't we do that?
Cool.
It may be better this year.
Hey.
I have heard from people representing Logitech, MSI. We may have Sony in the mix. A few more. So keep your eyes out. We'll probably be recording them in the next couple of weeks, and we'll start running in December as normal. And we'll be doing 12 daily giveaways with some really big packages. The other things to keep your heads up for are we have started running holiday gift guides, both on Geek Dad and Geek Mom. And obviously each one will have a slightly different slant to it, you know, depending upon which site it's on and who it's coming from. But there is some really good stuff. Obviously it's things that all of our writers have picked up over the last year or so. And we want you to take a look at, and hopefully there'll be some inspiring ideas for folks for things to get for their geeky spouses. So check out both. And just to be clear, Geek Dad and Geek Mom will be posting different different holiday geek guides. There's going to be plenty of stuff, plenty of cool ideas. So take a look at both of them. Matt, anything? Post of the week?
Wanted to mention. Let me pull up here. The post John Booth did just sort of the pointer on the peek that Entertainment Weekly did on the the new Muppet movie that's in production, because I'm really, really anxious to see what they come up with. Because, I mean, I love that they're calling it, that the working title is The Greatest Muppet Movie Ever Made.
that has humor on so many levels.
Exactly. But also because, I mean, it's been a while since they made a movie, and the last couple of movies they made were really disappointing. And it'd be nice to see the Muppets do a story that's really about them instead of an adaptation of something else.
Right. And the stuff they've been doing on their YouTube channel in the last year or so has been a lot of fun.
It's been so creative. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
We just showed Muppet Bohemian Rhapsody to a couple of friends at Halloween, and they were like, oh my goodness, that's just...
Oh, that's a great... It's tremendous. It's so wonderful, yes. And the Beaker Ode to Joy. I mean, they just have such wonderful stuff there. And they're actually doing little cooking videos on if you go to the Disney Muppet site, they have like little cooking videos that you can watch. But with Cat Cora.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they're actually doing cooking. Yeah. But they're amusing too.
Well, she always made me think of a Muppet a little bit. Anyway, so. One more interview I will never get.
So I'm just really excited. I love that Jason Segel, who's a talented actor and also a fairly talented writer, because he wrote Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which he also starred on. Mm-hmm. And and of course he was on Freaks and Geeks and such, and he's on How I Met Your Mother. But he's writing the movie, and he's, you know, he's a self-professed, you know, Muppet fan since he was a kid, and you know, so I have high hopes.
You have hope.
Yeah, I have. Yes.
As we all have for The Hobbit, you have for the next Muppet movie. Sounds good. All right, Jonathan. Post of the week, stuff upcoming?
Post of the week. Well, you know, it's going back a ways, but the short story that Charles Yu wrote for our site for Geek Dead Week for zombies.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you all read that, but the first person shooter. It was a fun zombie story that he wrote just especially for us to use, which I thought was pretty cool.
It was very cool.
And then since then, I mean, I saw he's been writing a lot of original short stories for various sites, and you know, they've all been really fantastic. There's one on Lightspeed magazine that was called Standard Loneliness Package, and it takes place in India. It's like, you know, we outsource everything. Well, now they've figured out a way to outsource like negative emotions. So, you know, people outsource their grief and their pain to, you know, Indian call centers. And it's really like it's really well done, because you've got that sci-fi aspect to it, but then at the same time, you know, he's really tackling a lot of this, you know, well, we do outsource basically all of our crappy jobs that nobody here wants to do. That's what they get, you know. And you get the point of view of someone's like, yep, I log in and, you know, I experience someone else's, you know, going to a funeral, or, you know, all the unpleasant things that people don't, like going to the dentist, you know, I don't want to feel this. Some other guy can, you know, pay him somebody to experience that pain for me. But the zombie story was, you know, I thought was a, you know, kind of a neat one, where it takes place in a big shopping center, and it doesn't go where you expect it to go. But I won't give any way beyond that.
All right, we will check it out. Mr. Donahue, how about you?
Right. Well, I'm glad Jonathan's here, because I've thoroughly absorbed his Small World review. It's weird being in Australia, because every now and again you'll read these reviews of stuff that you guys have got a chance to play with and had a look at, and then you go, how am I going to get that? Because you got to find some small distributor that's decided that they can bring some out or something, or you have to find a way to buy it for the States. And then with licensing deals and all the other stuff, sometimes that becomes harder than you otherwise might think it would become. But Jonathan, I'm wanting to know, because you talked a lot about how similar it is to Risk. The board looks very colourful and all the cards and everything. Has it got any similarities to Catan? Because I've just, my boys are 7 and 8 and I just spent the weekend teaching them Catan.
You know, it is not like Catan because it is not a resource-based game.
Okay.
It is entirely a, moving armies around. And actually, one of the commenters pointed out, and I went back and double checked on this. It's actually a re-implementation of a game, from the late 90s called Vinci. Which was, sort of European civilizations moving in. And they took that and they put this, fantasy flavor on it. And it works really well because it's pretty amusing. You get these, these combinations where you say, okay, look, now I have, flying giants. And, the next person comes on with, whatever, berserk skeletons. And the mix and match, basically it gives, it's more of a, unlike Risk, which, you if you have bigger armies, you're more likely to win. But it's not guaranteed because there's still the roll of the die, right? In this one, it's just purely numbers. You go, okay, I'm going to attack this territory. This is, here's how many people and reinforcements you've got. It takes me this many to attack you, and that's just how it goes. And then on the very last one, on the very last one, you can say, okay, well, I've got this many people left. If you have at least one left, then you get to roll a die on your very last conquest. So there's like this one, maybe I'll get it, maybe I won't. But all the other ones, it's just purely, you count out, you can plan out your attack and go, here's how many territories I can gain this turn. And then how thin you want to spread yourself out, because then, if you take too many territories, well, you don't get more, don't get more armies. You just have this is how many you start with and that's it, and you just spread them out as much as you can. And then once you said, well, that's as much as I can do with this race, they go into decline and you get another one and you bring them into the board and start, and so it's a pretty, it's a fast, much faster game than Risk, because it takes about, 40 minutes to an hour to play it. There's a limited number of rounds. And so it's like, okay, you play your 10 rounds, 9 rounds, and that's it. You don't keep going until someone has, totally eliminated everybody
Domination,
else.
Yeah.
But you're actually going for points. And then there's different ways you get, different ways to get points. So it's like, oh, okay, well, if you're human, you want to get as much farmland as you can. But if you're a dwarf, you want the mines. And so there are those advantages. But the thing is, the mines aren't all in the same place. So you've got to go through someone else to get to the other mines.
Mine. Yeah. Great. Sounds good.
So it is, a nice one. I think, I know Dave Banks had the iPad app. And he said it's a really nice implementation. I guess that's something that you might be able to get.
Yeah,
I have to check that out.
But it's I guess the app is 2-player only, or one or 2-player only. So you can't get the whole, 5 people coming in at once. But other than that, he said it's a very nice implementation of the game.
Awesome, very cool.
Cool.
Well, I'm just gonna bring up one thing. I'm gonna mention that just caught me out of nowhere, and there was a little bit of synchronicity with it happening, especially what was in the post. About, 4 days ago, Z posted the little video about the Goonies 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And they've just put it out, I think, on Blu-ray and everything, which is totally awesome. And, one of the primary people they talked to in this little video that's up on YouTube is Ke Huy Quan, who played Data in the Goonies, and who played Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And it just so happens, just completely randomly, we had adopted a new dog in the last 2 weeks, and we named him Short Round. Completely independently of this. And so at one point, I bring this up on the computer and I go, oh, wait, gotta show this. And call the boys and look, it's Short Round. It's Short Round. And he's like, oh, whatever. But as kids are wont to do. But, sure. but it was totally cool. I mean, you listen to the guy talk, and it's like, it's Short Round. Okay, yeah, he's 25 years older, but it's Short Round. That was really cool. So sorry. It had a little personal connotation, and we're very happy to have a little Short Round in our family. But
yes.
So cool. All right. Trying to think if there's anything else in terms of heads up in the next 2 weeks. Basically, we're advancing on Thanksgiving. No huge deals. So, anybody else got anything else they want to mention before I round this one up?
Don't think so.
I guess not.
Yep. Round up.
Obviously, let's see. We're looking for Harry Potter's coming soon.
Yes.
Movie number one. All the trailers look excellent. So, going to be there for that. Is there one more biggie before Christmas?
Well, Tron.
Well, yeah. Okay. Tron and Harry Potter. It sounds like a perfectly good holiday movie season to me. Okay. Yeah. Well, awesome. Then I'm just going to say this has been The Geek Dads, episode number 80. I'm Ken Denmead, editor of geekdad.com. He has been Mr. Matt Blum. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Matt.
You are welcome, and thank you, for as always, for hosting.
Fantastic. Happy to do it. We'll thank Mr. Jonathan Liu.
All right, thanks.
Fantastic. You'll have to let us know. You said your wife was probably out delivering a baby.
Yes.
Hopefully not her own.
Nope. And, it might, because apparently this patient has been in several times saying, I need to have my baby. No, you don't.
We know how that goes.
Yeah, so you know, we'll see. She hasn't come home yet, so maybe she's actually delivering a baby.
Could be. You use the Pitocin to induce. Tell her that. It's my consult to her. IV Pitocin, and that'll do the job. And Dan obviously knew what the hell I was talking about because he laughed. So, and thank you to Mr. Dan Donahue.
I do.
All the way from tomorrow in Australia.
Oh, thank you. Well, yes, I was going to say, enjoy today, tomorrow, won't you?
We will. We have and we will. Thank you. Otherwise, thank everybody in the chat room, especially Jenny. As always, Jenny, you provide great support in the chat room. DJ Murdoch III, thanks for your input tonight. And everyone else, listeners, thank you for listening. Stay tuned. We will have a Hip Tracks in a week. Another one of these in 2 weeks. We'll be hitting some 12 days of Geekmas really soon. It's only getting more exciting towards the end of the year, folks. So stick around. Hopefully we'll continue to entertain you. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next time. So long.
Cheers.
So long, everybody.
Bye.
Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad.